All right. Thank you, Pam. Right. I'll let the marshal call us back in from recess.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bratvold, Judge Cochran, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Diane B. Bratvold presiding.
So I see a counsel for appellant and counsel for respondent by WebEx today. And if you just nod whether you can hear me or not, okay. And I know you have an understanding as well of how to reach out to us if for some reason you lose audio or visual. So I want to just remind everyone, just for our oral transcript, oral record today, today's date is July 8th, 2020. We are on the second matter on our oral argument calendar. That is file number A20-0007. It's Michael Anthony Davis, petitioner appellant, versus Amanda Lee Lewis, respondent. And the marshal has indicated, placed the time clock. I hope it's visible to both counsel. And you should keep your eye on that because, of course, our conversation tends to go quickly. And then I'll remind you that a couple of things before you start your remarks. Please make sure that you state your name for the record as well as the client that you are representing today. And then also remember to mute your microphone while the other attorney is speaking so that our sound quality is improved. And you'll notice the judges do that too, just to make our recording a little bit better and have the proceeding go more smoothly. So with that, counsel for appellant, we are ready for you to begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is David Schoberg. I represent the appellant, Michael Davis, in this matter. This matter is a very simple case before the court. It's just a question of whether the respondent met her burden of proof that pursuant to Minnesota Statute 518.175, subdivision 3, that was in minor child's best interest to relocate to the state of Nevada. The statute provides 8 different factors for the court to consider. Keep it in mind that it is her burden to prove that is in fact in the child's best interest. The issue here is whether the underlying district court abused its discretion by not holding the respondent to its burden of proof, and that the facts of the case and evidence presented were sufficient to make the findings that were entered by the district court. I'd like to walk through some of these factors. Some of them are inapplicable, such as the minor child's preference, domestic abuse. So there's only a few of these factors that bear focusing on. The first one, the district court found as regards to the nature, quality, extent involvement and duration of the child's relationship with the person proposing to relocate, the non-relocating person, siblings, and other significant persons, the court appropriately found that the minor child had significant relationship with both parents and extended families. The court doesn't extend that finding beyond that, but certainly that finding in and of itself would go against relocation. Simply put, we're not talking about an absentee father. We're not talking about an individual who is located in the state that has no extended family. This is home for this minor child for all intents and purposes. The district court did not elaborate upon this beyond just simply stating that it's a very close relationship. We go on to the second factor, essentially the age, developmental stage, needs of the child, and likely impact that the relocation will have on the child's physical, educational, emotional development. And this kind of ties into the educational argument that the respondent presents. Her argument is that she found a school that is vastly superior to the school in Duluth. The basis for this is essentially that it's more racially diverse. And that it has potentially a higher teacher to student ratio. But that is essentially all the respondent offered in her testimony was just an opinion. She provides no objective facts to support her position.
Counsel, didn't respondent testify that she visited the school and it was more diverse, that children were speaking multiple languages?
She did testify that she met with the school, correct. She did also come up to the conclusion that it was more racially diverse. And that is also correct. I think that the big problem with relying on that finding or that basis, specifically that it's a more racially diverse school, or that she would, this minor child would be exposed to more racially diverse environment, really, I believe, is an absurd conclusion to support relocation. And it's very simple. Father is African American. And reducing the frequency that the minor child's going to have contact with her African American father as a basis to support the relocation is counterintuitive. It just does not make any common sense. So yes, she did meet with the school. There was no other objective facts presented. Specifically, the appellant in this matter presented evidence that the National Assessment of Educational Progress, or NAEP reports, at least as far as the school systems in general between Minnesota and Nevada, there really is no comparison. Nevada is a vastly inferior school system to Minnesota.
Are you suggesting that the district court's finding regarding the statistics is clearly erroneous then?
Yes, Your Honor.
And why is that? I mean, the statistics are overall statistics. They're not school specific, correct?
Correct. But the respondent in this matter never presented any other sort of statistics that would suggest that the school in Nevada was, in fact, superior to the one in Minnesota. So the only real objective evidence that was presented were these NAEP reports. So from that perspective, the district court simply just rejected these this evidence out of hand.
So, counsel, I'd like to ask you about what I hear as a sort of an underlying assumption in your argument on this, on the factor that we're discussing right now. I believe it's the second one, right? The child. I read that as a the district court is supposed to consider the child's needs, one of which is education, and see how those would be met after relocation, and then ultimately make a best interest determination. But that individual factors may be neutral. They don't necessarily have to weigh one way or the other. So perhaps this is a neutral factor since our district court didn't specifically say which way it weighed. And then the second question I have is, you seem to emphasize which school system is superior, but I don't see that in the factor itself. I don't see whether it requires the judge to choose the superior school system merely to assess whether the child's needs are met in a particular school system. But maybe I misunderstand the factor.
Well, I think the argument is that the court found that the school was superior in Nevada than that of Duluth. So I'm referring more specifically to the district court's finding rather than the statute. She relied specifically upon the respondent's testimony that this was vastly superior educationally for the minor child.
See, the way I read that, counsel, and I don't mean to, you know, interrupt you, I want to let you answer, but the district court is certainly reciting the testimony that was given by Ms. Lewis, saying that the school system was superior. That was evidence that was offered by her during the hearing. But I don't see a finding from the district court that the Nevada schools are superior to Minnesota schools, only that the child's needs would be met in Nevada. But maybe I misunderstand, and you go right ahead.
Well, I'll just finalize my comments on that. I think the district court, I would disagree to some level just saying that I believe the district court relied on that finding in so much as that's a basis between the racially diversity and the general characterization of it being a better school as a better opportunity for the minor child within her analysis of the best interest for the minor child. I would like to address, and I think it's probably the most important factor here, is preserving the relationship. This is factor number three, preserving the relationship between the non-relocating person and the child through suitable parenting time arrangements. And this is really a frequency versus a quantity type argument that was presented at the district court level. The respondent essentially argued that, well, geez, father would not be losing any time. So therefore, this move, this relocation, really isn't going to affect his relationship with the minor child. And I would argue that just defies any sort of common sense. Going weeks and even periodically up to 2 months without seeing the minor child absolutely would have an effect on the relationship between any parent and a minor child. The Supreme Court's own directions as far as the, instructions as far as what appropriate parenting time based upon ages of child would certainly contradict going up to 2 months or even a month without seeing a minor child of this age. We do have some case law that's cited. This is the Antoine Lee versus Holter and the Tom Peck versus...
So was the document that you just referenced, was that introduced as an exhibit in the district court proceeding?
It was in the motion to amend. It was certainly referenced within the memorandum. It was certainly brought to the district court's attention, yes. Specifically on the motion to amend, it was not in the initial motions before the court.
So given the broad, the very deferential standard of review here, which you mentioned earlier, how was it an abuse of discretion for the district court to consider that the father would have more parenting time and take that into consideration in determining the best interests? I understand your argument about frequency, and I, you know, as a parent, I certainly know that makes sense, but the flip side is the district court found that father would have more overall parenting time. And so how is it an abuse of discretion to say it's not, to find that it's in the child's best interest to allow the move where the father would have more overall parenting time? And also, I think the district court focused on that the father, the time difference would facilitate more evening conversations with the child by phone.
Sure. So I think you answered that to some extent. To set aside the district court's findings as clearly erroneous, the findings must be either manifestly contrary to the weight of the evidence or not reasonably supported by the evidence as a whole. And any parent, such as yourself, exercise any sort of common sense can answer that question, that going that period of time without having access to the minor child is adversely going to affect that relationship. And that is not
enough. Does that mean then that any move out of state beyond just Wisconsin or Iowa is not in the child's best interest? I mean, doesn't the statute contemplate looking at all the factors and you know, in making that determination?
Okay. Absolutely, Your Honor. But this kind of returns me to some of my other arguments, which is this move didn't have to happen. This wasn't where the employer was telling her she had to move to Nevada to pursue her career. This was on a whim. She decided that she wanted to up and relocate to Nevada. The basis of this was she went online and found a state that has higher average RN wages and decided to forgo any of the similar opportunities here in the Twin Cities, while acknowledging that similar employment was in fact likely or possibly available here. And so to answer your question, no, she would look at that, would any move out of state be impermissible under those? No, clearly that's not the case. Courts grant moves out of state and for a multitude of different reasons, but under this fact pattern, it's clearly erroneous to permit the respondent to relocate out of state when the exact same or similar opportunities would have been available to her within the state. And that really is kind of the big issue that we have here, is she chose to forgo these opportunities. The wage income information, which the court relied upon, and this is kind of dealing with factor number six, that the court found that this would enhance the respondent and the minor child's lives by this relocation to Nevada. The average annual salary for an RN pursuant to rule exhibit 4 in page 111 in Minnesota is $77,000. Duluth, it's $63,200. While in Minneapolis, the average RN salary is $81,510. It's pretty much indistinguishable between the income that she was being offered in Nevada. Additionally, when you actually look closer at her income numbers, the move to Nevada is a slight difference in income. Yes, there are some, we acknowledge that there's some additional benefits that are available to her employment in Nevada, but certainly there is no reason to believe that these similar employment and benefits wouldn't have been available here in Minnesota. And from a public policy standpoint, I don't believe that a parent should be able to relocate on whims without exploring comparable employment within the state. And I think it's interesting that on page, I think it's page 111 of the transcript, that she chose not to explore the Twin Cities, despite knowing that these similar opportunities were available, because she didn't want to live near the appellant. So I see that my time is terminated. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. And of course, if you have additional comments, you'll have time to present those to us during your rebuttal. So I think the marshal is in the process of, well, no, there to go. We are reset. The clock is reset and we are ready for you, counsel, for respondent. You can begin when you're ready.
Hi, good morning and thank you. And may it please the court. My name is Patrick Doran and I represent the respondent, Amanda Lee Lewis. The overarching theme of Mr. Schuberg's argument mainly relates to the effect that this would have, or as it relates to his client. And while I understand his client is not going to be particularly happy about the court's determination, at the district court level, the court should be mainly focusing on what the best interests of the child are. And what appellant wants you to believe is that there is no evidence to support the finding that it is in the child's best interest to move to Nevada with mom. Certainly, appellant argues that this move will have a negative effect on the child's emotional well-being. And I'll get to some case law on that in a second, but I just wanted to point out that that assertion is simply not supported by the record. And I'll just give a couple examples, some of which has already been stated by the court during appellant's argument. But the district court noted that Ms. Lewis credibly testified to the fact that she did her own research, went out to Nevada, toured the schools, determined that the diversity exposure at DeVore and Hal Ober in Nevada was superior. The teacher-to-child ratio was lower. In response, appellant provided statistics from 2017 for fourth and eighth graders in only two subjects, statewide and not specific. Those were slightly outdated. The court found that argument to be unpersuasive. So it's not as if the court is ignoring the differing opinions between the parties. The court's properly weighing those opinions and making a decision on such evidence. And it would be my opinion and certainly my client's opinion that that determination is not clearly erroneous.
Mr. Doran, I'm going to inquire, just following up on that last point Mr. Schoberg made, the factor, and it's actually paragraph, it says number 12 on the court's order, the reasons of each parent for seeking or opposing the relocation. And I noticed in looking at the judge's opinion that the judge simply recites the reason and recites the opposition, but there's no analysis in that finding as to why or how the judge concluded that that factor favors the move and why, which ultimately is what the factors are for. My question for you is, does that, in an example of a finding that makes it difficult for us to do meaningful review if the judge doesn't analyze how the judge came to the conclusion that that's a good reason that that factor favors the move or granting the move?
Good question. I think not to skirt the question, and I'll get to the specific answer. The court's looking at all factors, not just one factor. And as one of the other justices mentioned, some factors may be neutral, some factors may be negative, some factors may be positive for a particular party. I think the court might have answered your question in a separate analysis, in that neither party prohibited the other party from experiencing or having some sort of contact with the child. There was never a time where either party withheld parenting time or prohibited one party from experiencing parenting time or exercising their parenting time with the child. So I can't speak to why the court wrote the order the way that it did. I'm certainly not the judge that's responsible for doing it. The implication is that the court answered that question while doing the analysis for some of the other factors.
Just to follow up on that, let's assume for our discussion, because apparently that may be true from a number of the factors that we might implicitly read neutrality in them. Do you believe it would be an abuse of discretion? Let's say, for example, all of the factors a court found neutrality and still granted the move. Would that be an abuse of discretion to allow in that scenario?
Well, I haven't seen any case law that would tell me that that would be an abuse of discretion. I don't think the court found in this case that all factors were neutral. But to answer your specific question, I don't think that specific fact scenario has been decided by either the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court of Minnesota. So it would be difficult for me as just an attorney here arguing and advocating on behalf of my client to answer that specific question. Frankly, you would probably be in a better position to answer that question than I would.
What are the key factors you believe that support that the court was not neutral, that supported the move? If there's a key one or two that you would point us to that would support the judge's decision?
Well, I think it's allowing the developmental growth of the child is probably the main factor. And I'll point to a couple facts that would support that. One, mom was working two jobs. She wasn't making nearly as much. It was more difficult for her to spend time with the child. So the court correctly found that with this new job and the less hours and the greater pay, mom would be in a better position to parent the child. From the child's perspective, let's take the cheer example. While the child was in Minnesota, the child couldn't even participate on her cheer team because dad wanted to exercise his parenting time, which conflicted with cheer practice. And so I'm not judging dad for taking that position. I understand that he would want to spend time with the child. But moving to Nevada, mom was able to prevent evidence that the child could participate in cheer, and that wouldn't affect the summer parenting time with dad. Then we get to the other factor regarding diversity. Both parents said that allowing their child to grow up in a diverse environment would be beneficial to the child. And the court found that respondents' testimony on the diversity of the area, the diversity of the school, to be a factor that would support the developmental needs of the child. So that would be the one factor that I think is overwhelmingly in the respondents' favor. And I think the financial aspect points to it too. You know, Ms. Lewis is getting, again, a better job. It's undisputed that there's better pay, you know, the health insurance. The court is well aware of that record. That's going to allow mom to feel more comfortable. She's going to have less working hours. She's going to be able to spend time with the child. The child can still, as one of the justices pointed out, can still FaceTime, phone calls at night with dad. So I think the court correctly found that the development of the child is going to be better served in Nevada than it is in Minnesota. So if you're asking me to pick one factor, that would be the factor that I found the court's order to be most persuasive on.
Counsel, when you say the development of the child, the factor relating to the development of the child, are you talking about factor number two?
I think so. I don't have the factors in front of me, and I can...
Well, I can read factor number two out loud, and I have a follow-up question for you on that factor. Do you have the judge's order in front of you? So that second factor is the age, developmental stage, needs of the child, and the likely impact the relocation will have on the child's physical, educational, and emotional development, taking into consideration the special needs of the child. And my question for you is, what findings did the court make regarding the child's emotional development? The appellant argues that the court really didn't fully consider that, and I would like you to point me to where you think that in the order, in the discussion of that factor, the court considered the child's emotional development.
Sure. Good question. The words of emotional development don't appear in the district court's order. And so I would just point this court to some case law, Auger v. Auger, I don't know if it's an Americanized version of the last name or still French. But essentially what appellant is arguing is that the potential negative effects on a minor child's emotional development as it relates to the move, what I would classify, first, appellant didn't bring an expert. There was no objective testimony. There was no psychological assessment or anything like that. I think everybody can agree that a move of this caliber is going to be difficult for all the parties, whether it's...
Respondent didn't bring an expert either, is that correct?
That's correct. But what the court found in Augie v. Augie is that just because the move is going to be difficult doesn't automatically mean that the move is going to be emotional, have a negative effect on the emotional development of the child. So I would agree with the court that the words emotional development don't appear in the district court order. I think by answering thoroughly or analyzing thoroughly all of the factors, the court is saying these factors outweigh these factors. Yes, nobody's going to disagree that a move to Nevada is going to be difficult for the child, is going to be difficult for mom, is going to be difficult for dad. The court is saying we think that all of these other factors, these pros, are going to outweigh that difficulty. And I think the case law would back that up.
And did the court actually make any findings that the school in Nevada would be more diverse, or did the court just find that mother testified to that effect?
Well, I think even in appellant's counsel's argument before, he even admitted that there was no disagreement that the diversity in the school statistically is greater than the diversity in the schools in Duluth. So I don't think that's necessarily a disputed fact, but to answer your pointed question, no, the court took respondent at her word. Another case I wanted to, which a case that I think is similar to the case that we have in front of us, Geiger v. Geiger. It's a 1991 decision by this court. Like respondent in this case, that respondent was the custodial parent, and the court granted permission to move residence of her children out of state. Similarly, like appellant in this case, the appellant in that case had joint custody, joint legal custody, and liberal parenting time rights. Similarly, in that case, appellant argued that moving would be difficult on the child because of the adjustments to the new community, being away from one parent. In the court's opinion, in that case, a case in which the district court denied appellant's request for an evidentiary hearing, it didn't even get to an evidentiary hearing. The court cited Bateman v. Bateman, noting that the custodial parent is entitled to seek a better life for herself and the children, particularly where the exercise of that option appears to be truly advantageous to their interests, and provided that the parental interest can continue to be accommodated, even if by a different visitation arrangement than before. That's exactly what we have here. The visitation arrangement is undoubtedly going to be different. Here we have a parent that believes and persuaded a court that the move to Nevada would be truly advantageous for the family. The appellant is going to get the same amount or more parenting time. The respondent's employment situation is going to greatly improve. And this is all while allowing the opportunity for the party's minor child to experience a more diverse environment, to participate in cheerleading without affecting dad's parenting time, all factors that both parties agree are important in this case. I just want to be clear that the employment benefits are substantial for Ms. Lewis. I know appellant's counsel briefly touched on this. increase in yearly salary, considerable health insurance benefits for her and the minor child, a child care credit, a substantial 401k match, a student loan credit, all in addition to the fact that there's no income tax in Nevada. We're not talking about a small jump in employment benefits. We're talking about a large jump in financial benefits. And of course, as I noted earlier, she's going to be working less hours and therefore spending more time with the minor child.
So, Councilman, I'd just like to follow up on that analysis of, I think you're now talking about factor six, basically, the quality of life, which does certainly includes finances for mom's job, as well as the benefits, all of which would pass to the child. So, you know, I think it's fair to say that even though the judge in the order never says that factor six weighs in favor of the move, we could infer that. And in fact, in my own assessment of the district court's order, maybe that's the only factor that clearly weighs in favor of the move based on the district court's finding. If that is a correct analysis of the district court's order, since it's silent throughout as to which way each of the factors go, and all of the other factors are neutral. So what I'm trying to say is if factor number six is the only one that weighs in favor of the move and the others are neutral, has Ms. Lewis met her burden of proof? If there's only one factor that weighs in favor of the move and it's basically the financial factor?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And that's because the court is tasked with looking at all of the factors, all of the evidence as a whole. And so if your assertion is correct in that all of the factors are neutral and this one factor weighs in favor of Ms. Lewis, it's the court's determination and the court's discretion under this, you know, appellant isn't arguing a violation of law, a misstatement of the law or anything like that. If one factor weighs heavily in favor of one party, I don't see how it could be an abuse of discretion for the court to say, based on this one factor, and none of the other factors are negative, the remaining factors are neutral, based on this one factor alone, there's a substantial benefit to the minor child in such that we're meeting those best interest factors as a whole.
I'm muted. There we go. I have to remember to unmute myself. Thank you, counsel. So it looks like there are no other questions for you at this time. So we will turn to appellant for the rebuttal argument. You've got 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Certainly the district court's underlying order is kind of absent of any of this weighing of the factors. And there's certainly some implicit weight to that. Ultimately, she just comes to the conclusion that it is in the minor child's best interest. But I do want to address this issue that if only one factor is in favor of the relocation, this is specifically being factor number six, is that sufficient enough for the district court to grant the request to relocate? And the simple answer is yes. Any best interest analysis, the district court can certainly give greater or lesser weight to any of the factors. However, that's kind of an abstract argument. When we look at the facts of this case, we are looking at a situation, again, this kind of rehashes my arguments, is that in particular, in this case, she did not have to relocate. And if the only factor that supports relocation is a greater job offer, essentially anybody in the greater Minnesota outside of the Twin Cities could then subsequently find a higher paying job in a different state.
So, Council, I heard you make that argument in your opening presentation to the court. And I guess what, on reflection, I'm struggling with is, under what legal authority would we impose the burden on Ms. Lewis here to show that she could not get this job in the state of Minnesota? I don't see that in the factors, and I'm not familiar with case law that has imposed a burden like that on a parent that has filed a motion to relocate.
Sure. I'm not aware of any case law that explicitly puts that burden on an individual, but I think implicitly at least that there's that should be a factor that's taken into account. So if the issue is, hey, this is a better job opportunity, and that's the reason I'm moving, I think it just common sense asks, was this same job available in Minnesota, where the relationship between the minor child and her maternal family and her paternal family and the appellant, the father, could have been preserved and not damaged, or put her in this position where even the respondent acknowledges yet that, yes, this any type of move is going to be difficult both on all parties involved. In other words, this could have been avoided entirely. And it was not.
Mr. Solberg, you made that argument. I'm somewhat presuming that to the trial court judge, but you just conceded a few moments ago that even one factor, if it favors, would not be an abuse of discretion. My question is whether, and following up Judge Bradfield's, what relevance would that be for our appellate review in terms of an abuse of discretion if there's no authority so stating it and the court considered all the factors, and even if they're all neutral but for one?
I think the problem here is we don't have that analysis from the district court as far as what weight she granted these factors or which factor favored relocation. But I just go back to the finding that the respondent in this case had that burden. And that the finding it's not reasonably supported by the evidence presented before the court. And so that's why I believe it's clearly erroneous. In other words, implicit or inferred finding that, yes, this is a better job opportunity or higher income alone simply cannot carry enough weight under these factors to permit a out-of-state move under these under this situation. I don't know if I specifically answered your question, but I just acknowledge that the court can grant different weight to different factors. But here we don't even have the benefit of that analysis from the district court. We just have a broad overreaching statement.
Can you remind me about the testimony regarding the impact that the from father about the impact that the move would have on his relationship with the daughter and the argument you made to the district court in that regard?
Yes, Your Honor. I see that my time has expired. If I may have leave to answer your question.
You can go right ahead, counsel. Thank you.
So,
in other words, you argue that the district court basically ignored that testimony and that argument. So can you specify for us what evidence you did present in that regard?
Sure, Your Honor. So there was a testimony, quite frankly, by both parties that father was a very involved father. They had a very close relationship, including phone calls, even multiple phone calls on a daily basis, and that father would attend essentially almost all of the extracurricular activities, school activities, was very involved with a minor child's life above and beyond his regular parenting time schedule. So certainly father testified that this lack of frequency and personal contact would adversely affect the minor child. This inability to attend these extracurricular activities would affect both the minor child and subsequently his relationship with the minor child and not being able to be present and involved with these type of activities. So at a very minimum, this type of testimony was presented.
There wasn't any testimony from a psychologist or other person regarding the impact on the relationship.
There was nothing, Your Honor. And quite frankly, both parties were self-represented up until a couple weeks prior to the trial. So at that point, there just simply wasn't sufficient time to gather those type of professional opinions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further from the panel? Okay. And thank you, counsel for appellant, as well as counsel for respondent. We very much appreciate your arguments here today. They help us and guide us in our decision in this case. So the matter is now submitted to us for a decision, and we will issue a written decision within the statutory timeframe. So our thanks to counsel. We will now be in a short recess while we get ready for our third oral argument today.